Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top-secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Ken Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
Welcome to another edition of Geek Cave Podcast Gaming. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
I'm Chad.
Video games, the only way you can waste your entire life, but yet, somehow, somewhere out there, someone is better than you at doing so. Welcome to the gaming segment. Brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you can look rad today, with free shipping on all orders within the U.S., plus great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. And Gamefly, video games delivered, your destination for new and used video games. Browse the collection of thousands of games for you to keep as long as you want without worrying about late fees. Then when you're done, just send it back with the postage paid envelope for a new one, or pay a lot less than in-store prices and keep it forever. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. And also welcome to everyone who might have found us on Podchaser, the IMDb of podcasts. We just got listed, so we appreciate you for finding us, however you find us, because Yay. It seems word of mouth. Word of mouth is key. So if you like what you're hearing, please tell your friends and loved ones and maybe even a few of your enemies. And if you don't like what you're hearing,
tell them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like what you've been hearing, you've been listening to Kinda Funny Games Daily. I say that jokingly, by the way, because our next guest, and we're not going to keep him waiting because that's rude, actually, you might have heard on Kinda Funny Games Daily. He's got something really interesting in store, so let's go ahead and bring him on. So you know how your parents told you that you'll never learn anything from playing video games? Well, our next guest wants to kind of flip that a little bit, so to speak. We've got Zach Hartzman here from Hey Listen Games. Zach, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so for anyone who might be unfamiliar with Hey Listen Games, I think it's a really cool idea. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about what Hey Listen Games is all about?
Sure. So I'm a teacher in New York City. I teach currently 11th and 12th grade students. And over the years, I've always wanted to find ways to incorporate various aspects of pop culture into my classroom. I started off with comics mostly, because I teach social studies, I teach US history, so I'd find ways to bring comics into my classroom. Quite often it was X-Men. And I then started dabbling with movies, TV shows, and I eventually wanted to bring in video games, since that's pretty much the biggest aspect of my own personal life is gaming. And when I originally wanted to do that, the first thing any principal or admin is going to ask you is, okay, what are the outcomes? What are the standards you're going to hit? Where's the lesson plan, basically? And when I started looking for lesson plans, I couldn't find anything online, because there are teachers who do this, but there aren't too many teachers that do it. And there's next to like no resources out there. So I basically just started creating all my own lesson plans and curriculum. And when I showed that I had actually put thought into this, my parents was like, yeah, absolutely do this. I trust you 100%, especially since she had already seen me teach with comics a lot. And so I started teaching video games and it went well. So I created Hey Listen Games as a space for me to put my curriculum out there for other educators who are interested in teaching with video games or game-based learning, since it acts like a starting point, since all the curriculum, all the lesson plans I just put there for free. And there's not many other spaces that do that, even paid for it. There's just not really any spaces to find the actual lesson plan, like the handouts, the slides, and the whole thinking around how to use different video games.
I was going to say, that is absolutely amazing, Zach. I, as somebody who has a degree in education that focuses specifically on history, I understand exactly where you're coming from. And this is just an amazing idea. It really is.
And luckily, I didn't have parents who told me you'll never learn anything from video games. So they kind of kickstarted my passion for it.
My takeaway on that, what I was very impressed with, is I spent a lot of time today on your website and looking at lesson plans and putting together, you know, and is that the games are actually there to teach, not just reward. And the lesson plans are built around. I adore that because when I was growing up and on, well, I guess I'm the old one in the group.
No, you're not.
That's what I'm saying. When we were growing up, probably all four of us played Oregon Trail or played, you know, Science Tic-Tac-Toe or whatever, you know, MS-DOS, you know, thing was there. But it was, yeah, but it was so specific to teach this exact thing. And you're using this pop culture item, you know, God of War using God Loves Man Kills. That was what I was reading today, was the comic book one.
That was one of the comic books I used 2 years ago now when I was teaching about the civil rights era.
And then shifting over into something that's so completely different from God of War, like Journey, and how this is teaching not just the history and stuff, but also teaching the language arts and how to tell a story. And it's amazing. I mean, that's just an amazing idea that I wish somebody had had it 30 years ago.
I wish they had it 15 years ago for me. And so what you were talking about with Oregon Trail, so a lot of, especially, I mean, this is for me, a lot of the, whenever a teacher had me play video games, it was the reward, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here, you did something in class or you're a little bit of ahead. Now go play this other video game that might reinforce a little bit of what you've already learned in class. And those games are often clearly made, they're educational games. So they're made with the intention to teach you a specific thing, and they're extrinsically motivated. You're not actually usually having fun while you're playing it, right? And the reward is that you've learned, whereas games for entertainment purposes, Journey, God of War, Gone Home, What Remains of Edith Finch, all these games are intrinsically motivated, where they were not made as a teaching tool. They were just made because the developers wanted you to have fun, right? So if you can take a tool like that, things that our students are already playing, kids are already playing constantly, and just find a way to analyze it in a different way, then it's intrinsically motivated because they're having fun in the process and learning at the same time. It's not they're playing something to learn something at the end. They're learning while they're engaging with it.
So in my other life, you know, that's not podcasting, we're taught to, I'm clergy, and so we're taught to think theologically, you know, always think kind of with this extra piece kind of in our brains. Is that kind of what you're talking about? Is now we're playing games, but we've got our minds in history or in language arts or in social studies, or I'm trying to conceptualize how it is that you're approaching these games when you're creating the lesson plans.
Yeah. So you mentioned Journey, and when I used Journey, I was teaching the hero's journey archetype when it comes mm-hmm. to literature. So Harry Potter, Hunger Games, every single hero that you've ever watched or read about in anything ever. And they all know about, they might not know the name, the hero's journey, or like the exact steps, but you teach that in class. Maybe you read a text with them, but the whole, you never just want to read, here are three different short stories about the hero's journey, right? You want to hit different modalities. So maybe you read a short story, maybe you watch a movie or a TV episode, or you read an issue of a comic, but video games have been left out. So I brought in the game Journey because the hero's journey is very defined throughout that game. So while we're playing with it, I asked them to look at it through the lens of this archetype. So mm-hmm. The concept of the hero's journey wasn't introduced to them with that game. They already know about it. And then now that they know about it, let's see if they can analyze how it was used in this story.
I was reading an article today. The kind of the unique use of Journey is that Journey takes the player on the hero's journey. It's not the character that's on the hero's journey so much as it's the person actually playing the game. And now I'm monopolizing all this time while I'm gushing, and Darren's got serious questions to ask in his own segment. And
but before we get to Darren, I want to say that... but seriously, Journey is one of my favorite games, and at first I didn't put it in the concept of the hero's journey, and then I went back and just kind of thought about it, and you're absolutely right, Zach, and that's an amazing way to look at it, and that's it's bloody brilliant is what it is.
Thank you.
I was going to have a snarky question about using the game Pandemic, but I saw that you already had. So instead, I just want to ask in general, how do you choose the games that the curriculum is then applied to? Or is it a case of you've got the curriculum in mind and then you find a game that matches? How does that process work?
It's probably more the second one, where I have my curriculum in mind and then I find the game that matches it. So I'm in a lucky situation. So I'm in New York, and New York has its history standards that you're supposed to hit.
Sure.
But I'm in an interesting position where I teach at an international school. It's a public school, but I teach at an international school that's for a 100% English language learner immigrant population. And because of that, the standards that we need to hit are slightly different. So I don't need to follow New York State's curriculum by the book. I actually, with my planning partner, pretty much create our curriculum from scratch to meet the needs of our students.
Nice.
And because of that, we kind of get to teach whatever we want, whatever the students want, and then I'll find games that hit those points. So like this year, which we started the year with a focus on various like housing issues throughout New York City history, which I'd never taught a unit like that before, but why not? Like they were interested in it, so we started making a unit out of it, and that brought me to a game called Donut County, small indie game, where it's kind of like Katamari, if you know Katamari, but you basically just control a little hole in the ground, and you just swallow things up, and the hole gets bigger, yes, and bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'm blanking on the name of the developer, but he created the game based on his experience with gentrification in LA. Right, so we went over how gentrification has impacted New York City, and then we played the game, and they analyzed how gentrification was represented in the game, and how the whole game itself is basically just one big metaphor.
That is astoundingly impressive. I would not have even put those together.
I play like a million games, so I also will just like find things like, oh, I can bring this into my classroom.
Okay, so. It was that kind of the genesis then for using Celeste? I mean, when your students kind of have their things. I was watching the Twitch stream yesterday, talking about struggle. You know, Celeste is kind of the importance of recognizing that we all struggle, and it's okay.
Definitely. So at my school, and this is common for a lot of schools now, I have my history class, but then I also teach what's called an advisory class, which only meets twice a week. And it's not credit bearing. It's not core concepts, content, but it's more about social emotional check-ins and just making sure, is the student completing the work? Are they on track for graduation? Just how are they doing in general? And often we would get to create our own lessons for that regardless. And a lot of that is talking about having a growth mindset, overcoming adversity. And because my students are all English language learners, there are some state exams that they need to pass in order to graduate. And they'll often fail a couple of times because the exams are in English and that's not their native language. So it'll take a couple of attempts for them to pass it. And that's what Celeste is about. You are going to fail a million times playing that game. So when I originally played it, I was like, oh, I could totally use this, have a fun lesson with them just playing the game, and then actually talk about what failure means and how we can overcome failure and push through those challenges.
Yeah, if anyone hasn't played Celeste, it is available on Game Pass right now. Highly recommend that you try it out. I have died so many times in that game. What kind of response have you noticed from your colleagues as far as the idea of, hey, listen, games?
Some of them love it. Some of them are, I don't want to say older, but older.
Okay.
Dismissive?
They're like not. They're not dismissive. They're all like 100%. You are clearly passionate and you're doing this, but they're just like, oh, I don't understand video games, so I don't even know how to engage with it. But there's no one in my school has been like, this is a bad idea or this is a stupid idea. And well, they knew that because I even had my video, before I even started incorporating games into my class, I would have my video game club that would meet once a week. And my classroom would be packed with like 30, 40 students. So they knew that the students were passionate about this.
That's where were you when I was in high school?
I don't know. Where was I when I was in high school? I didn't have that either.
Yeah.
Well, and that will actually raise a couple of questions. You're using the video games and so forth. Where are the resources coming for the kids to be able to play? I mean, if you're in the classroom versus, I mean, you can kind of assume that they've all got Chromebooks and so forth at home if they're going to play, you know, Who Wants to Live a Million Years. But it's quite a different thing when you want to play Super Mario Odyssey and talk about culture and appropriation, and that's on the Switch only.
Yeah. It's a good question. That's actually one of the main concerns that people come with, like access to tech and just money in general.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll start with the Chrome. So I do have a class set of Chromebooks. And whenever a game is free to play through a web browser, mm-hmm. Like Pandemic, like the Republic of Times, I'll have them play individually or in pairs on a Chromebook because it's just super accessible. When it's a paid game, like Mario Odyssey, I'm actually just bringing in my Switch and projecting it in the front of the room. It's not every student is playing their own copy. We're playing it together the same way that we would a documentary or a movie. Or any video.
Okay.
So one student's the player, and then the rest of the class is just watching, giving advice, or just engaging in discussion while it's happening.
And so that's where the handouts come in, is that's keeping them engaged with the what culture, and Super Mario Odyssey, what cultures do you see? How are the cultures being, and then that can lead naturally into discussion.
Exactly.
Okay. That makes sense to me.
Not everyone needs to be the player, and honestly, not everyone's going to want to be the player. You will have a core group of gamers who are going to want to play, but you will also have students who either don't game or just aren't into gaming, or you'll have gamers who are shy and don't want to play in front of 30 other students. So Twitch is a thing, right? Tons of people just watch other people play video games. I have students who don't play, but love watching other people play. So there's going to be, not everyone needs to be the player.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a particular game, especially with the new generation that's coming around, that you'd really love to adapt to this curriculum that you just haven't found the excuse to do so yet?
So surprisingly, the franchise that I haven't used myself yet that everyone is constantly like, you need to do this, you need to do this, you should do this, is Assassin's Creed. I feel like that's the go-to. When everyone thinks of like history and games, they now think of Assassin's Creed, but I actually have never brought that franchise into my classroom. And I might sometime in the future, but the problem with a franchise like that is if you look at the curriculum on my website, most of those games are under 5 hours.
Right.
Right. And it's easy to play start to finish. Some of them are not, like Mario Odyssey, where you're just, I kind of just select different levels. But when you do that, it's a big ask on the teacher beforehand, because that Super Mario Odyssey lesson, you can't actually teach unless you've already beaten the game. Because then you can use the level select.
Yeah.
So when you get into a thing like Assassin's Creed, where a game is 50, 60 hours, there might be a part of the game I want to show, but how much am I asking the teacher to have played and saved beforehand? Mm-hmm. So at a certain point, it just doesn't become realistic. So I do tend to focus more on smaller indie games. But I would like to bring Assassin's Creed in at some point in the future, because kids love that franchise. So why not try at some point?
It's a great idea.
You know, I'd like to spin that question, you know, Darren.
Yes.
What game would you use, or what game would you want? Justin, you're going to get it too. I've got my answer.
I'm thinking. Darren, go first.
Oh no, I wasn't prepared for that.
while you're thinking, I would lean into the BioShock franchise.
Okay. You
know, eight to 10 hour long, but very deep into the particular philosophies that it's criticizing. And so it's a little bit blunt and blatant, you know, for what Zach is doing. Zach is being far more critically thinking and engaging with it. but the idea of being able to dig into those things. So, Darren, you look like you've...
No, I don't have...
No, not even
I wasn't
a little
ready.
Bit.
I wasn't ready for this. if I had to just kind of take a shot in the dark, I almost want to say... For lack of better reasoning, Mike Tyson's punch out and the problem with racial stereotypes. If you look at all of the fighters in Mike Tyson's punch out, they're all stereotypes. That game does not age well.
You know, I didn't think about that, but now I'm thinking about on how all they're all drawn, and yeah.
100%. Yeah. Justin.
Probably using TMNT, the video game for the Wii, to basically show that life is shit and it's going to be very hard no matter what you do. That is a joke answer, by the way, Zach.
I haven't played that one.
Yeah,
don't.
You're better off.
You're better off. No.
I think it might have just been Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I think the one on the NES way back in the day.
Oh yeah, that was my runner-up. Yeah.
You remember like the seaweed level?
Yeah.
I quit that franchise after that.
Oh. No.
The funny thing is that the seaweed level wasn't nearly so hard for me as like fighting Bebop.
Okay.
Because by that time Donatello was gone, and so I couldn't just sit on the edge of the thing and hit Donatello.
Maybe it's just a Turtles thing.
I honestly thought that Darren came out with the best answer. I honestly thought he was going to say something jokey as well and going to be like, no, Horizon Zero Dawn. You got to know where to shoot the dinosaur robots.
Yeah, sorry.
Although that would be another cultural one. No, like as a cultural set of lessons, it's another like 90 hour game. You don't play that in class, but, the way the different characters are, or the different cultures are presented.
Zach, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention congratulations to you for being featured on the Game Awards as one of the up and comers. How did that feel? Did that kind of take you by surprise? Did you know it was coming?
So it's funny. I remember Jeff Keighley like tweeted about that they were doing this thing called the Future Class, and
yeah.
I didn't see the tweet. It was actually my wife who saw the tweet, and she said, "I think I'm going to submit you for this." I'm like, "You're okay. I mean, you don't have to, but sure." And so she did. And then I think like a week went by, and I get an email from them saying, "Congratulations, you've been chosen as one of the future class members. Don't say anything. It's confidential. It'll be announced on Thursday, whenever the Game Awards went live." And I was like, "Oh, this is cool." And it didn't like hit kind of how cool that was yet until the actual day of, because I didn't know that it was only 50 people from around the world. I thought it was going to be a much larger list than that. So when I saw the list, it was only 50 people, and I was like, oh, damn, I recognize like almost all of these people, because these are much bigger names in the industry than myself. I'm just like a teacher in New York. So that was really cool. And then just seeing all the other people have contacted me like, oh, this is like, why aren't you my teacher? Why weren't you my teacher? Where were you in school? Like all those questions. It was like very reassuring that people like the type of content and work that I'm putting out there.
So if I could correct one thing in your sentence, I'd like you to remove the word just, you know, and be like, I'm a just a teacher minimizes your work. And that's, I shan't allow it. I'm getting looks from Justin and Darren like, Chad, you're being rude to our guest. No, I am building our guest up. Our guest is doing magnificent things, and I shan't have it minimized. So
I gave you no such look, Chad.
You're just looking for an excuse to use the word shan't.
Who isn't? So we talked about what game you'd like to use, possibly, And we talked about the genesis, you know, beginnings of this, you know, and using comics and so forth. So mine is going to be, what's your favorite lesson? What's the one that you just look forward to being able to present without fail each time? Recognizing that probably it's like the when the guitar players ask, what's your favorite guitar? And they say, the next one. You know? And realizing that, you know, it might be the next game that's got you the most excited because then it's a new thing. But what's the one that's so far? Because you've got like 30 lesson plans or more, you know, with different games. I mean, there are so many on the site, you know.
So I'm going to give a couple different answers for this.
Perfect.
For a lesson that's accessible to every history teacher, the one I like to do every year is with Papers, Please. And I teach with that game whenever I'm doing a unit on immigration or refugee crises. I teach U.S. history, but it can easily be used in a global history class as well. And basically, right, in that game, the player is a border patrol agent, and you go over the documentation, the passports, permits, and decide who gets to be let into your country, the fictional country of Arstotzka. And I never actually play the whole game with my students. We just play for one day in class for like 35 minutes just to put them in that role. And for my students, it's really fun because all of my students are immigrants and many of them are refugees. And it's very interesting to see them in the role of like accepting or denying people, because some of them will be 100% by the book, like, nope, this paper is wrong, get the hell out of here. And other ones were like, no, we got to let them in. They look good. They're okay. Let them in. So it just really gets cool conversation going in my class every single year when I teach with it. A lesson that is not accessible to most other teachers, but that I loved teaching with, was a lesson I did with Super Smash Brothers in my history class.
Okay.
Any guesses as to what I did?
Axis and Allies?
No. You're not going to get it.
Okay.
No, I'm certainly not.
So I was teaching a unit on I think it was during the Civil Rights era, and we were going over voting rates of different demographics in the United States. And I was showing, we were looking at various graphs of voter registration by race, by age, by gender in the United States during the 60s, early 60s. And my students were having a difficult time really extrapolating what information was presented in graphs. So for example, there was a graph that showed how African Americans had lower voter registration rates than white Americans. And some of the information that they thought that meant was that African Americans just didn't care about voting, right? So they saw a number, and then what the information that they applied to the number was wrong, because it wasn't that they didn't care, it was that there was vast voter suppression happening during that time, therefore registrations were lower. So to help make that clear and to help them properly interpret information in graphs, I brought in Super Smash, since that was their favorite game to play in my club, my video game club. And I'm extraordinarily good at this game. None of my students have actually ever beaten me. What I did was I brought the game in, and I had a student come up to play against me, and I put a handicap on myself, where it was much easier for the student to beat me. Basically, I started with a whole ton of damage, so they only needed to touch me one time and I would lose, whereas they were normal and I would have to beat them normally. And we played a whole bunch of rounds, and obviously the students won like 5-6 times in a row. And while that was happening, the rest of the students were actually creating a bar graph of the results. Okay, so at the end, they had a graph made where it showed me barely winning and another student winning a lot more. And then I told them to explain, what if you were just looking at the graph, what do you think that would mean? And obviously across the board, they were like, oh, well, this player is better because they won this many times. But that wasn't technically true because I was starting with a handicap, right? And so then they started seeing how you need to have this background context. You need all this information that is not visible in just the numbers to understand what that graph is telling you. Because then we took off the handicap, we played again, and I annihilated the student when it was on an even playing field, Right. So then we looked at the graphs again for voter registration numbers, and they came to the conclusion, okay, we can't just say that African Americans didn't want to vote. We need to look deeper than what the number in the graph is saying. So then we got out all the primary sources and articles to see what was actually going on. That's like a very me lesson. That's not super accessible for more teachers, but it worked wonderfully.
Well, and the passion to it comes out that as someone who really does not like Super Smash Brothers in any of its forms, I would be the one in the back very diligently marking down all of my bar graphs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to impress Mr. Hartman this way. I better make sure my homework is really, really good.
All right, and then I got one more. So while I teach my U.S. history class, I also teach an elective English language arts class where it's a shorter amount of time, meets less times a week, and it's an elective course. I can kind of really teach whatever I want. And in this class, the idea was to analyze video games as text and look at the various literary elements and rhetorical devices used in video games, same way that they already do in their normal English class with short stories, poems, and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And for this class, I always use Gone Home and What Remains of Edith Finch. Two very accessible games. They're both walking simulators, so you just kind of walk around the house, interact with all the different elements, pick up things, observe, and you're just trying to progress the story, really. There's not too much gameplay. It's just, here's a narrative, and you go with it. And both games are just wonderful, and they resonate really well with students across the board, not just in my class, and all the other teachers that I know who have also gone on to use these games.
That's absolutely amazing. Zach, like I said, as somebody who has an education background myself, who knows a lot of teachers, I know how hard it is sometimes to make the lesson plans, find the resources to actually implement them. And for you to really think outside of the box on this and come up with something so brilliant that is appealing to the students, it just, I cannot applaud you enough for this. This is absolutely amazing. And you deserve all the accolades that you get for this. And I hope something like this catches on in other schools across the country, even the world, because anything that can help students understand the subject matter better is good.
And it's starting to catch on. There's still not, I really can't think of any other places that have lesson plans the way that Hey Listen Games does, but like Epic Games has an education department now, and they're trying to get Fortnite into schools using its creative mode. Like I know one teacher who basically uses creative mode to create Rube Goldberg machines for science class, right? And it's like Epic Games is pushing that. They want schools to use that. They want schools to use Unreal Engine. So video games are making a push to be in more education spaces.
Well, Zach, we've managed to bogart a lot of your time today. I really appreciate you joining us on the show. I know that Chad and Justin do, too. If people want to find out more about Hey Listen Games, if they want to support you, because this is definitely something we think is worth supporting, how can they get in touch with you, or how can they get in touch with some of your resources, and or maybe, you know, throw you a Patreon donation or something your way?
Yeah, so the easiest way to be in touch with me is on Twitter. I'm at HeyListenGames_. Don't forget the underscore at the end. Unfortunately, some random, unused, inactive, like set for 7 years account has HeyListenGames without the underscore. So it's at HeyListenGames_.
Of course.
And I'm pretty active on there. You could send me a DM and I'll respond fairly quickly. My website is Hey Listen Games. It's heylistengames.org. There is also, if you don't use Twitter, don't care about Twitter, there's a contact form on Hey Listen Games. You can just fill that out. It'll shoot me an email. My email is also zach.hartsman@heylistengames.org. And if you would like, so all the materials are completely free. If you do feel like you would like to support some of the work I'm doing, there is a support page on Hey Listen Games where you can go to, you can either donate like privately through PayPal, or I do have a Patreon page, which is patreon.com/ Hey Listen Games if you would like to throw like $1 a month my way, or maybe a cup of coffee a month.
Awesome.
I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it right now, and it's buy me a cup of coffee. Absolutely.
Well, we'll be sure to put a link up to the website and the support page at geekcavepodcast.com as well. I know it's kind of late for those of us on the East Coast, or at least it is for me. I started work at 3 this morning, but Zach, I really appreciate you again just coming on and talking to us about such a cool idea.
No, thank you. I could talk about this stuff forever, so thank you for having me.
And again, if you want to know more about Hey Listen Games, we will have the link to the website in the podcast description, as well as at geekcavepodcast.com. Zach is a really cool guy.
Yes, he is.
Agreed.
Yeah. Definitely give him some love.
Mm-hmm.
We are already running a little long. Chad, you got anything for us?
Yeah. Isn't there supposed to be intro music for this?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Demo Derby!
The demo for this is not nearly exciting as the intro. I feel a little bit like an 80s Ninja Turtles cartoon right now.
You're welcome?
Yep. So I played the demo for the game when the past was around. And the demo allows you to play the prologue of the game. So to set the scene for this, there's no opening text, no dialogue, and not even really cutscenes in this. You just start. The art style for it, well, no, we'll start with the game. The game is a point-and-click game. You know, you go around, you solve puzzles. Solving the puzzle grants you feathers. The feathers lead you to open doors that lead to different scenes, more feathers, more doors. Your standard kind of point-and-click stuff. And the prologue gives you very little to go on. The main character, if you can call her that, is a young woman who begins the game, this prologue, by freeing a shadow that's in a cage. So the shadow looks like a humanoid, you know, that's in a gigantic bird cage. And she frees that. And when you finish the first puzzle, she gives that shadow a shawl to wear.
Okay.
You know, everyone should be warm.
Yes.
When you solve the second puzzle, the shadow's head is revealed. Like, so you know it. And it's the body of a human male with the head of an owl.
Okay.
And then the final puzzle of the prologue, the owl man gets a violin. And then the close of that, the close of the prologue cuts to a scene that has the owl creature playing the violin for the girl. And she's just kind of in this enraptured state of listening and seemingly joyful at this music. And then she reaches out and touches the violin, and we get this really dissonant chord. The first one of the entire piece. There, we'll talk about the music in a second. And then everything goes black and the demo's over. All right. So the art style is wonderfully simple. It's like pencil drawings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very... There's not very many rich colors in it. It's all seemingly kind of washed out a little bit. And like I said, standard point-and-click style puzzles. You know, you have to assemble the music box by finding the pieces to put the music box together, which means solving puzzles to get the pieces. You know, why is there a piece of the puzzle in the piano that you have to play a melody on? Because it's a point and click game, right? You know, I will say that of the prologue, the puzzles at least kind of made sense. You know, they were straightforward. It wasn't, you know, put the pulley on the rubber chicken so that you create a zip line.
Those are fun, by the way.
Yes. The music is gentle but catchy, and the music goes throughout, and you get a sense that the music is actually kind of half of the point of this, because it's just this, it's as pervasive as the Mario theme, You know, it's all the way through. You know, this particular musical theme is all the way through this thing, but after a couple minutes, it just kind of fades into your mind, and it's like it fits perfectly. That's the way this is supposed to go.
Okay.
You know, it works. It's not it's not arresting or distracting to the process. The puzzles aren't particularly taxing, at least the three rooms worth of puzzles I had. But even that, I would suggest that the game is probably a lot more about the journey of playing the game and piecing together the story than it is about challenging the player. So it's simple, as I said, music's catchy. And at the end of the day, I was charmed by the demo. I really was. So as to my demo derby, at less than $10 on the PlayStation Store for this, I think it's worth your time. I'd say this one is a buy the game.
Cool.
All right, what's it called again?
It's called When the Past Was Around.
When the Past Was Around. All right, cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, a good demo there for Chad.
That's much better than last month's.
That's, to me, the mark of a great demo, is if it gets you to buy the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if it's something that you think would make it worth it, well done on the developer side. All right, speaking of things being worth it, Justin, do you have anything?
Well, thank you for asking. As many of you know, I have a wide breadth of knowledge, but I don't get to play games that much. So I scour Reddit's Ask Games to find questions that I think need answering in a little segment I like to call
Ask Justin. The Geek Cave podcast and its associates, including Justin, do not condone the advice given in this segment.
Thank you, Nigel. So, this month's question is pretty straightforward. What is your strategy for getting through farming and grinding? Well, farming takes a lot of work and patience. First, you need a decent plot of land, too small and it's just gardening. Next, you need the proper tools, tractor, combine, harvester, irrigation, and so on. You also want to make sure that what you're planting is suited for the soil type and the climate of the area you live in. Lastly, you need patience. This isn't an overnight operation. It will take months of tending and, honestly, luck to achieve a good harvest. As for grinding, you need to find a person who you find really attractive.
Whoa, whoa,
what?
I think we've heard enough. Thank you, Justin.
I got another 3 pages about grinding.
Yeah, I'm sure. No, I'm
sure they get it.
I found this great book called The Karma Sutra.
Sure, yeah, you did.
Yeah, no. See,
it's got pictures.
I'm sure it does. Most of your books do.
You're just saying that because I'm the comic guy. All right.
I'm saying that because you're the comic guy.
Oh, I get it.
quick, Darren, before he picks up where he left off.
Okay, all right. Before we get to the pile of shame, I got a couple of quick reviews to get through. Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the game, based on Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the movie.
Based on Scott Pilgrim versus the comic.
Yes, has been Scott Pilgrim versus the World re-released on PlayStation Network, Xbox Live, Steam, Nintendo Switch. It's one of the best beat-em-ups I've ever played. If you like side-scrolling beat-em-ups, get it. If you like lots of pop culture references, get it. If you like really, really needlessly long final levels, I'm talking 20 minutes for a level and a beat-em-up, I don't know why you'd be that kind of person, but get it, because that's there too. It gets 4 indie rock bands out of 5. Avengers Hawkeye DLC is out. It's fine. It's fine. It's kind of like playing Avengers, except with a new character. It's
the Hawkeye of DLCs.
It's the Hawkeye of DLCs, and it's not even Clint Barton. You're playing as Kate, and you're trying to track down Clint, and I don't want to spoil anything, but let's just say that due to the sales of Avengers, if you get this DLC, do not expect to leave satisfied. I'll just say that, because there's a very good chance you might not get any further DLC. The good news is it's free DLC, so at least you'll be left unsatisfied, but you won't have paid anything for it. But we've already done Darren's first time in the last segment. So, I think that's all I have. Chad, does anyone else any other reviews before I get to the pile of shame?
Yeah, I got a review for you.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I played this game called When the Past Was Around, and
Wait. Didn't we just do this?
Well, I reviewed the demo. Now I'm going to review the game because I did buy the game. It was really good.
Oh, all right, okay.
So I won't spoil the story entirely. We'll say that the story, it's about grief, and it's emotionally taxing, but in all the right ways. And so you can see the demo derby for gameplay and art style and so forth, which holds through the entire thing. I enjoyed my time with the game, with the exception of one single puzzle that uses a mechanic that shows up for that one single puzzle. It's never alluded to before, and it's never talked about again. But look it up on Wikipedia, or just, you know, text me, or write on my Facebook page. I'll tell you how to solve that one. The game's short, it's bittersweet, and I'm glad that I played it. I gave it an A.
All right. Cool.
So we'll let him talk about the same game in the same segment, but I can't finish my Ask Justin in the grinding segment. I mean, I did copious research on the grinding part.
Yeah, I'm sure you... Oh, look at that, Kent.
It was created by a madman. Ignored and rejected. Every week it grows. We cannot kill it, for it does not live. Step fast and be wary. Or you may fall victim to Darren's Pile of Shame.
Sorry, I mean, you know how it is. He hits the button and we just got to go with it.
Yeah.
Sorry, maybe next month. So,
Oh, don't tempt me.
Do you like foxes?
I do.
Yeah. I don't know what they say, but I like them.
Yeah. Well, that's fair. Do you like games like Journey?
I do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you like repetitive gameplay that starts off pretty entertaining, but by the end of your experience, you wish you'd never started?
Not usually.
Let's talk about Spirit of the North. Spirit of the North was released in 2019 from Infuse Studio on everything. A Switch, PS4, PC, Xbox. Now it's on the PS5 and the Xbox Series, whatever. And you play as an Arctic fox, or as I like to refer to it, a majestic snow dodo. And it's a puzzle platformer. And it starts off really simplistic. You're just wandering this landscape. You're finding shaman staves and bringing them to the bodies of shamans and helping their spirits along the way, and it's fine, it's whatever. There's no dialogue. Eventually you meet a spirit fox and you start tag teaming on puzzles, you know, gaining abilities, mega barks to clear corruption away from the wilderness, whatever. It's very clearly there's a bit of an environmental message, but you know, it doesn't beat you over the head with it. It's fine. It's really good. It's really pretty until you get toward the end. And by that time, after you've, like me, pumped about, I want to say 12 hours into a 5-hour game,
ooh,
you, and I don't think I actually pumped that much time in, but that's how it felt. Because by the time you get toward the end, you realize this gameplay is really repetitive. These puzzles are ones that I could figure out in a few seconds, but it takes me multiple tries because the controls aren't great, and one time I glitched through a mountain. And
That's the best way to get through a mountain.
Yeah, unfortunately, I couldn't continue after that, and I had to restart.
Okay, not so much.
And the music is good. Unfortunately, it is the same two songs that you will hear on repeat for the 5+ hours it takes you to finish this game. And that's kind of a problem that happens with indie games is, you know, they're limited by budget constraints. I get that. I'm not complaining because the music was good until I got tired of hearing the music. And then I wanted to do anything but listen to the music and eventually turn Spotify on my PS5 and listened to AC/DC while I played this majestic, relaxing Fox game, which helped a little bit. In the end,
well,
though,
I personally listen to AC/DC when I want to relax.
Yeah, that's fair. In the end, I went back and I looked at reviews from other places, and it got a lot of eights and nines, but it also got a lot of fives out of 10. And that's kind of where I'm falling, like a 2.5 or 3 majestic snow doggos out of 5. Because by the end of the day, it's, for what it is, it's really pretty, and the mechanics are mostly there, but it wasn't enough to keep me going to actually finish. I got to the point where I just stopped playing because I would look at it and think, I want to do literally anything else. And again, it's not that it's a bad game. It's just, for lack of a better term, forgettable. So, unfortunately for Spirit of the North, don't be like me.
That's a shame.
Yeah. Although, if you don't believe me, or maybe you just want to try out for yourself, you can use our free trial for Gamefly. Find the Deep Cave Plays video. We do a video of each one of the Pile of Shame games, just so you can kind of see what I'm getting myself into. You can find that there on our YouTube channel. Gentlemen, any further business for the gaming segment?
I move we adjourn.
So, in this issue of Playboy, I have
I want to thank Zach Hartzman for joining us from Hey Listen Games, and you can find out more in the link on our video podcast description. You can also find us on YouTube, Geek Cave Plays, and Retromantics. You can listen to Chad and Justin talk about movies on You Want Me to Watch What? You can find our other podcast, Geek Cave TLDR, which sums up longer stories into, well, audio versions of the stories, because you don't have time to read it, but you do have time to listen to us, and we appreciate that. And of course, wherever you find us on your favorite podcast service of choice, please leave us a review and drop us a line. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or anywhere else that you could possibly get a hold of us. Heck, if you see one of us online on the PSN or Xbox Live or Steam, shoot us a friend request, and who knows? Who knows? You might be pwning noobs alongside me. Probably not. Be sure to check out the movies episode. I say that because I'm terrible at Call of Duty. Check out the movies episode tomorrow. Go back in time yesterday to listen to the comics episode. And remember, everyone is a geek for something.